So today we have this gospel lesson continuing more or less from last week, except that we skipped over a few verses, which were the third time Jesus tells his disciples about his impending arrest and death, and on the third day, resurrection. Now the disciples know enough to know that when he talks about this, they just tune him out and ignore him and don't say anything, so don't get yelled at. And so that's what they did. So they go on with their lives. And today, and again, each of the three times Jesus says this, they respond with something stupid. Okay, so today, the stupid thing is when James and John come and they say, hey, we do with us this thing. Whatever we ask of you, you'll do it. And you know, I mean, you've had kids or you've been around other people. If they say, hey, do whatever I want before I tell you what it is, you know that's not a good deal. Don't sign on to that deal. That is not a good deal for anybody, right? And Jesus is understandably wary. What is it that you want? And they say, they give it up. They say, well, we would like, when you come into your glory, we would like to be seated at your right hand and at your left hand. By which they mean, we want the places of honor next to you when you are the guy in charge. Now, keep in mind that this is the same James and John that were with Jesus only some short time before, up on the mountaintop when he was transfigured before them. And Moses and Elijah showed up, and they were hanging out with Jesus, and Peter wanted them to stay there, and they all left. And they left, and Jesus said, don't tell anybody about this. But they remembered, and they had seen, when they say Jesus in his glory, like they could have that exact actual experience, that picture, that memory in their minds. And it seems like they're trying to say, we want the gig that Moses and Elijah had up on the mountain, which is a pretty presumptuous thing for a couple of fishermen to say, right? And Jesus is actually, I think, he's much less directly negative about this to them than I might expect, at least. Because he goes on and he says, are you really, you're able to do the things that I'm able to do? That he talks about the cup that I will drink and the baptism with which I'll be baptized, by which we can presume he means his death and his resurrection. Or not, his arrest and his death and all the bad things that happens. Jesus said, yeah, we can do that, no problem. Because they don't know what he's talking about. Remember, because every time he tells them what's going to happen, they ignore him, they tune him out. So they don't know, and he says, all right, well, you will drink the cup, and you will be baptized, which is to say, you will be persecuted, and you will suffer as I have. But I can't say who is to be at my right hand and at my left when the time comes. There is a bit of a parallel to when Jesus actually is crucified. There are people crucified to his right and to his left. And aren't James and John lucky that they avoided that fate? And so maybe that's even what Jesus is referring to, kind of talking past them in a way that sometimes he does. So this is the story, this is what happens. And then he gathers, and then the other people get mad, because they're like, hey, James and John, you're trying to take all the glory here, trying to take all the limelight. That's terrible. Why would you jerks? We're all on the same team here. Why are you trying to take, you know, we didn't even know that was a thing you were trying to take from us, but it feels like a thing you're trying to take from us, now that you mention it. So then Jesus, you know, calls them together and tries to explain, that's not how this works, be a servant of all, and etc. So this is the story we get today. This is there are a little synopsis. And I got to tell you, I struggled with this week, because it's too similar to what we've been doing for weeks now here in Mark's gospel. In fact, the last time Jesus told them what was going to happen to him when he was arrested and killed and rise again, they immediately argued about who was the greatest among them, among the disciples, which sounds really similar. And I feel like I already talked about that, and I'm kind of bored with the whole thing. The whole point is, like, it's so hard to follow Jesus. Yeah, I get it. We've been talking about this for weeks. I'm sick of talking about it. I bet you're sick of hearing about it. So I didn't know what to talk about. But then, at the 11th hour, I found something helpful. A commentary on this from 2009, which is kind of a long time ago now, because we're all older than we feel. By Matt Skinner at Luther Seminary, and it said something that was really, really helpful for me. So to get to what that helpful thing is, I'm going to step back for just a second. For me, the trickiest word in this gospel lesson comes right at the end, and it's the word ransom, when Jesus says, and give his life as a ransom for many. Now, sorry about that. Guess my microphone's on. Unfortunately, that word, ransom, used in that spot, the people who put the lectionary together paired it with this long reading, thank you, Don, from Isaiah, as well as this reading from Hebrews. And it kind of gives us the impression that this word ransom is meant to be interpreted by those things. But if you were in Bible study, you heard this already, every Bible scholar or whatever that you talk to or that you read about or you listen to say, don't do that. Say, the lectionary people are misleading you. That whole thing in Isaiah, that by his bruises or stripes we are healed, that whole thing, that is not what this ransom is. It's a different thing. It's confusing. And most of them actually say, like, just don't even read that Isaiah thing because it's just going to confuse people. I didn't feel right about changing it, but I did feel right about calling it out and saying, listen, this is not, sometimes the lectionary leads us astray, and sometimes Bible things can be put together in a way to give us an easy answer about what things mean, or a familiar answer that may not be entirely accurate. And so that's, again, everything that I read said, this is not the way to understand this. So we're going to set aside that Isaiah reading for now, and we're going to think, so what they did say about that Isaiah is like, first of all, it has nothing to do with Mark's reference. The language isn't the same in the two places, etc. And again, that it probably shouldn't even be talking about it. But here's what I found in this commentary from Matt Skinner about this word ransom at the end of our gospel lesson today. So it's the Greek word that they use for this is also used, of course, throughout the Old Testament in the Septuagint version, which is the Greek language version of the Old Testament, right? It was very common and popular, and that's basically what was being used by gospel writers. And when this word in Greek, litron, it doesn't matter what the word is. The point is, the Greek word that means, that is translated ransom here for us. Sometimes it does mean sort of a redemption or the purchasing of freedom or things like that. But just as frequently, he says, it refers to God's acting to deliver people. And so this is the sentence that I think is helpful. Skinner says, a litron, or whatever that word is a liberation wrought by divine strength, not by payment. So this word, give his life as a ransom for many, is that he gives his life as a divine liberation for many, or maybe for all, or maybe for people. It's not, the many isn't like super specific or important. The point is that when Jesus says he lives to serve others, and then he gives his life, so he dies, to liberate others, to set people free. And that, I think, is a helpful way to think about this, because now we've got Jesus talking about serving, or he uses the word slave, right? But that word isn't super helpful for us, so we talk about like servant and serving. So Jesus is saying, I live to serve, and I die to set people free. So it's the classic dichotomy of slavery or service and freedom. And what is the relationship, and what do those things look like? And finally, we're into a place where we can, I feel like I'm back in my like home field, you know what I mean? Like I feel like I'm back in a place where we can talk about it. Now, James and John were seeking a particular kind of freedom, we can say. They were seeking the kind of freedom that comes with sitting next to the most powerful guy in the world, right? They were seeking the freedom that comes with having power over other people. That is not the kind of freedom that Jesus is talking about. It's not the kind of freedom that is the ransom that is going to set people free, right? That's the kind of freedom. It reminds me of, you know, the twisted version of American freedom, right? Which is the freedom to do whatever I want without consequence. I mean, that's the freedom that so many people are talking about today, right? It's the freedom that I can do whatever I want, and there's no consequences for me, and there shouldn't be any consequences, and I don't get any consequences because I'm free. That is an adolescent, at best, version of what freedom is. Freedom from responsibility. Stop it. That's ridiculous. Nobody really wants that, except in the most short-sighted and narrow way. It's not the kind of freedom Jesus is talking about. By contrast, we have, in our Lutheran tradition here, our Lutheran tradition here, we have what ye old Marty Luther talked about as Christian freedom. And I'm sure I've talked about it, and I'm sure other pastors have talked about it, and maybe y'all know about this, but it's a good refresher because it's awesome. Which is when his book on Christian liberty or on Christian freedom, Martin Luther wrote, he said something translated about as, it says, a Christian, a follower of Jesus, right? A Christian is a perfectly free Lord of all, subject to none, subject to nobody, perfectly free over everybody. And at the same time, a Christian is a perfectly dutiful servant of all, subject to all, subject to everybody. Now, this is just like off my memory because I learned this in undergrad and it was really important, and I've like thought about it and talked about it a lot of times since then. The idea is that Christian freedom is freedom to be free, to do what you want, and freedom to serve other people. It's both together. You can't have one without the other. The freedom that God gives us is not freedom from consequence. It's freedom, it's ultimately freedom to recognize and accept consequence, because we know that that consequence is not the end of things. Because it's ultimately, let me say it like this. The freedom that James and John were looking for, the freedom from power, right, is the freedom, again, from consequences. I can do whatever I want and nothing will happen to me about it. The freedom that Jesus is talking about, it's really the thing is that freedom is grounded in a fear of consequences. I'm afraid that I'll get what I deserve, right? I'm afraid that something bad will happen to me if I make the wrong choice. And so I want this blanket freedom, this get out of jail free card, right? So that nothing bad happens to me, no matter what I do. And that, we all know, that's not good. It's not going to work. It's not going to help anybody except maybe that individual person for a short time. The freedom Jesus is talking about is saying, listen, you can do what you want to do. You can be the person you want to be. You can do those things. And there still will be consequences. But you don't need to be afraid of those consequences. You don't need to be afraid of what's going to happen if you do the thing. Because ultimately, all of those consequences are part of this world. They're human-made. They're what happens. They're what our neighbors think of us or whatever. And it's not that that stuff doesn't matter at all, but it's that that stuff ultimately pales in comparison to the grace of God, to the fact that the ultimate consequence of whatever we do or whatever we don't do is the love and grace of God, is forgiveness and salvation and life with God. That is the ultimate consequence. That has nothing to do with what we do. And so we don't need to be afraid of the consequences of what we do. That doesn't mean go around hurting people or doing things, because there will be consequences. And in the moment, that's going to be bad. Like, don't do that. Don't do that. Consequences are not the enemy here. The enemy here is really the selfishness that makes you want to avoid consequences. Right? That's the freedom that Jesus is trying to offer. Because if you know that the ultimate consequence is the love and grace of God forever, then you can stop worrying about yourself in that sort of existential way. And you can be, that is really the freedom to be set free to care about other people and to care for other people, to actively care for other people. That's what real freedom is. It's the freedom to be in relationship, in good, authentic, healthy relationship with God and with other people. I mean, thinking of freedom as like individual, selfish, me all by myself, like what's free about that? It's boring, it's terrible. Real freedom is to be able to authentically engage with other people, to share in their joys and in their sorrows, to be with them in their time of need and their time of joy. That's what real freedom feels like. I mean, this is the stupidest possible example. If you were stuck on a desert island all by yourself, you would be perfectly free to do exactly whatever you want with. The consequences wouldn't matter, and there's nobody around, and it would be miserable and terrible and terrifying, right? Because that's not real. Like, to be alone without consequences is not real freedom. It's its own kind of weird prison. It's not good. This is the freedom that Jesus offered. This is the ransom that Jesus paid so that we could be together. For many, it says, so that people could be together in authentic, good, healthy relationship, loving and caring for one another as God has loved and cared for us. That's what we're talking about. Okay. I have lots of other things that I would like to talk about, but the time is growing short. I mean, there's this whole thing about tyrants and those who lord it over them. We could get into a whole thing about politics with this. I'm not going to do that today. I will just remind you, there are elections coming up. Just because they're only local, they're still very, very important. So please vote and use your values to do that. There's, you know, ballot questions, and Lord knows, I mean, the elections in Minneapolis are like as consequential as any in the country right now in terms of the future of policing. It's a big deal. It's worth knowing about and educating yourself about. So please consider as you vote, and please engage in that civic process, and please use lessons like this one to help guide your civic engagement. The stuff about tyrants and whatnot, that's important. But that's not really the point of this for today. I also want to talk a lot more about freedom, because I'm going to have some things to say about freedom. But that's not for today. We'll just save it as a teaser for one of these coming weeks. Lord knows we're going to get more opportunities to talk about freedom and what it means in the scriptures and what it means in our lives. But for today, we can remember this core basic thing. The thing that, you know, this on Christian liberty thing that Martin Luther wrote, it was the thing my wife read when she was a Mennonite that made her think, yeah, I think I can be a Lutheran. I think this is good. It was the thing that I read when I was a Catholic that I thought, yeah, I might be into this. It's like Blake's, well, really? It's okay. We can talk about it later. That I thought, this is the real deal here. This is something that this is giving words to something that I have felt but didn't know how to say, didn't know how to experience. That freedom is not just doing whatever I want, but it's freedom, it's caring for other people. That's the kind of freedom that is the basis of our relationships. It's the core of our faith. Once we know what God has done for us, once Jesus has lived and died and risen again for us, showing us the example of how to be a servant and setting us free with his death and resurrection, this is the beginning. Right here. Again, this is review. You've all heard this dozens of times, I'm sure, in your lives. But it's never a bad time to be reminded what it really means to be free in Christ. Amen.